Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby, and today I'm joined by Katie Yagodnik, who is the co-founder of SFE Advisors. Katie, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, and Mason, thank you so much for having me. Excited to be a part of this.
I am super excited to chat through it because we do a lot on the pipeline generation and acceleration front. And what I think is probably one of the most underutilized focuses is the post-sales experience and actually working through, like, how do we get customers to stay and buy more over a significant period of time? And as a business owner 2 years in, I love NRR more than anything else. And it's one of the, it's just not talked about as much as it should be, coming from a marketing background primarily. I've been all focused on CAC and not the LTV side of the equation. So that said, I'm really excited to dig into ways in which you have built specific customer journeys post-sale that continue to increase NRR. So really to dig into it, we hear this advice often, which is you got to segment and cohort your customers to create different customized journeys and personalized experience. And I'm curious, as you've done that, how do you approach customer segmentation on the post-sale experience?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to a show me, you know me approach. And to be able to do that, the segmentation really has to go a step back from there, which is ensuring that you have the right data, because a lot of organizations haven't necessarily broached the gap or closed the gap on what does that post-sales data look like for me. And that could be anything from just having the capitalization and your customer's first name correctly so you can pull it into a campaign, to understanding what have they purchased, where are they located, what types of things are they interested in. And so when you take a look at having that data and then having a way and a platform of any type to be able to take that data and segment it, again, there are so many ways that you can do it.
I'm curious, as you've started to think through this, because when I talk to people, they think they think technographics, they think headcount, they think in all these other ways. And I'm curious, from your perspective, how would you recommend someone start thinking through the criteria through which they could segment their audiences?
Yeah, specific to, hold on, Mason, I know that there's an answer that I want for this. And I was focused so much on the digital journey that I was going to talk about, not necessarily the customer segmentation portion of it, but talk more into how I actually went for a digital adoption journey and looked at how I was going to segment my customers. But to that question, so that your team can edit it, I would say start looking at just general things such as customer spend, company employee size. You can take a look at where they're at in terms of how long they've been a customer of yours. In addition to that, you could take a look at what different types of products that they are leveraging so that you can look for the cross-sell and upsell down the road once you have been able to take a look at how they are adopting and are leveraging the current products that they have.
I love that framing of just actually look at who spends the most money. And typically, specifically in some of our clients that are in the software space, they spend more money. Like the incremental margin from a cost perspective, not that much. But the incremental margin from a spend perspective is exponential. So typically high spending customers in software are typically high profit customers. So I love that framing.
They are, Mason. But in addition to that, the high spend customers also probably are larger. And so you probably only have a very small sliver of the potential that you could have once you have proved the efficacy of the value you're going to provide in whatever you have sold them. So that's again why the high spend is always what I go to, because you probably only have what companies usually are the least loyal when they first purchase. It's, you know, years down the road when they become the most loyal. And those organizations, they just have a lot more opportunity.
Yeah, I love it. So once we've nailed down the customers from a segmentation perspective, I'm curious, again, as we think about this idea of retention and expansion.
Yeah.
Often this is just focused on key milestones and mapping out this is the information they need at these key milestones. So I'm curious, as you start to think through what are those milestones and how do we make sure that we're educating all along the way? Like, how do you start to map some of that journey out for your different customers and your different segments?
Yeah, I think the way that I approach this is because I have had to, within an organization, deploy collaboratively bigger systems. So to be able to do that, I had firsthand exposure to who was needing what when to make sure that we continued to move forward in whatever you're trying to get the team to do. So when I take a look at the different milestones in just a customer journey in general, you're trying to get them through implementation, training. There's also a component of digital adoption, and that can come in a myriad of different forms. I think what people learn 7 different ways, so you really have to take that into effect or into account. And then you've got that renewal, resell potentially period, which is also comes with expansion. There could be some risk, and you have to take all of those milestones into account, in addition to celebrating and making sure that your customers feel like they're valued, even when you're not asking them, obviously, for money. So specifically, when it came to really looking at how do you take a group of customers that are of all different company sizes and ensure that you are going to drive adoption? We had to look at multiple ways, or I've had to look at multiple ways in the past to do that. And I'm going to let you ask me a question here, Mason, to guide this conversation before I go into different ways. So go.
Well, one of the things that I think was interesting as we were prepping for this interview is just that often, even sometimes regardless of like company size, people come to you for a specific problem and then you solve that problem for them and then they unlock new problems. So what I, and this has also just been some of my own experience trying to map some of these things out, is like you can kind of build a large framework journey and then nuance it based on specific segmentation. So I'm curious, as you then think through those nuances and like making sure that we, to your point, are showing the customers that we actually know them without reinventing the wheel for every customer. Like, how are you helping to strike that balance as you map out some of these journeys?
I think it really goes back to the data. So in one of the projects that I did, I had a team of 5 or 6 people, and where now you could leverage AI and put all this information into AI to give high-level overviews of what people are asking when. We took all of our customers communications with us, albeit human communications, email, support, anything that we had. And we literally went line by line assigning what each customer was asking at that time. Was it a how-to? Was it, did you need a best practice? Were they asking for support? Were they needing technical help? So then we could better understand, regardless of company size, regardless of when they started with our organization, what were they asking for when? And that helped us to put the framework together into how we were going to put the right information in front of people, again, regardless of company size, and really start building a track and a cadence on what we are going to put in front of them in addition to how often.
I really love the just looking at everything that your customers are saying, going line by line and identifying, okay, what are the gaps that we've got right now? One of the things that is sometimes a challenge is actually getting that information in front of your customers, because I think about it, it's like, oh, obviously, like you would just have the person that is like the main point of contact for the customer, send that information, but they have a day job that is not sometimes like
just looking at your information all the time. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm curious, as you think then about kind of the digital experience and the digital journey in these different distribution channels, like how are you actually getting this information in the hands of your customers at the right time?
Sure. So again, when we mapped out who was asking what when, we were able to get it down to the by month that the highest percentage of people within the organization were asking for that information. But I think taking a step back there, Mason, when it comes to are they going to even open your information, it wasn't just like a blanket approach of here's the same information of everyone. That's where you have to start asking yourself who is asking these questions and how am I going to stay top of mind and drive habit and stickiness for different types of personas that emerge. So personas personas that emerge where an executive stakeholder is going to want different information in a different cadence than a potential admin, an administrator that's going to want different types of information and maybe a much higher cadence because they're trying to do things within it. Then you've got end users that are going to need different information versus managers that are trying to get the end users to use the information versus technical. So we've really started to branch out so that we were putting content together that was more relevant for each one of those personas to get a higher propensity for them to open it. And we were seeing 50, 60% open rates. And some of our cadences were twice a week sending information to people.
So I just want to frame it back because the first time I heard you outline what you were doing, I don't think I understood the granularity. Like it is by company, by person, by time bound. So that you could then understand the trend data of saying, oh, these kinds of people at these kinds of companies at this time always ask for this information. So why don't we proactively give them that information?
Yep, exactly. And not only give that, not only give them the information, but ensure that they are armed with any and everywhere that they can go should they have a question about that information themselves. And what I mean by that is it wasn't just about making sure we get into their email, which at the time, that was the top way to do it. I mean, 357 billion emails are sent on an annual basis. Only 11% of them are personalized. So we are that personalized, taking that step to try and get that personalization in there. But we had different one-to-many office hours, LMS that people could go to, making sure they could get to support easily so that in essence, we were empowering them to be as successful as they could be while still making sure to proactively serve up the right information to them at the right time.
That's amazing.
It was a fun project. It's a fun project to speak about. I will tell you that when you get and talk and look at results, we were able, because we had the different personas and to see what they were doing within our system and have benchmarks that we could meet. And we were seeing 100% uptick on the number of activities and things that customers were doing within our system versus an A/B test of ones we weren't sending the information to. Because at the end of the day, you have to be able to show, well, what is all this work that you're doing and how is it helping to drive the right customer behaviors that are going to hopefully lead to retaining them, to growing them? And I do believe that it really comes down to not only making sure your executive stakeholders are taken care of, but the people that are actually also in there doing the work day in and day out, influencing that lifetime spend for the future.
So as I then think through it, you are personalizing to the individual based on the email. So it sounds like you're probably enabling your customer success or your post-sale team with some form of cadences and templates. Were there any other distribution channels that you used in order to get in front of your customers?
Yeah, again, as I had mentioned, we made sure that we had one-to-many meetings that they could attend to at any time on different topics. Created a full-scale LMS from a lot of the content that we had curated for these emails so that customers could find it in multiple places. There was a knowledge base. Although I think what we found is that a lot of customers don't call things the same thing that you as a company call them. So you have to be really particular about how you phrase things and really make it easy for the customer. In addition to that, like I had mentioned, we had the support channel that they could get to at any time easily to be able to put in tickets. We also had what we deemed as a success squad where they could book 15 minutes of time if they needed somebody at any time to speak with them, because not everyone had a one-to-one account executive and our customer success person on their account. And then, of course, we had this whole train of emails and different things that were going on in addition to making sure we were getting customer advocacy, G2 reviews, all kinds of fun things in there as a result of hopefully making them successful.
I love it. One of the things that you referenced is you essentially had a holdout group that you could then measure up against, and you saw increases in engagement, increases in retention, increases in expansion. I'm curious if you had any specific core metrics outside of just those general, but like, how did you specifically know that those things were occurring as a result of this program?
So how we were able to measure this, we first started with the rudimentary, hey, let's look at our open rates, Let's look at the engagement rates on the different types of call to actions, the videos that we're asking them to watch. That was our first benchmark of success. And so when I say that we deployed this, I think overall we were seeing, we had 185 emails going at the time, 145 of them were ongoing, and we were seeing, what, 50, 60% open rate. So that was like, yay, at least they're engaged. Our subject lines are working. They're getting open. And then we started to look at behind that, when we're asking people to do the different things in the emails that we're sending, we were able to measure what were they doing, how much were they doing it. When you take a look at a whole cohort of, let's say, SMB customers, on average, they would do 100 touch points a month. Okay, we were saying that, hey, the people that were getting all of this constant communication, they're up at 150 touch points a month. So that's a huge increase as opposed to if they're not getting this a month. And then in addition to that, we were able to look at, what, 15 other different things. I mean, every single one of the actions we were looking to take, we could see in the system if they actually went in and did it. Yes or no?
I love the simplicity at the end. Like, I know it's really complicated to get there, but like the simplicity... Truly,
just, were they doing what we were wanting them to do? My whole thing was to drive habit and stickiness. Were we doing that?
And it's one of those things that I've just to call out relatively simply. If you just know the steps that you want your customers to take, and then you can just map out those steps and you can just say, did they do it? Yes or no? Again, it takes a while to get there. But once you've mapped it out and you actually have those in a dashboard that you can report on, you can just very clearly see, awesome, we know that they want to do these steps. As a result of doing these steps, they will stay for an additional 12 months. And again, something special that we've been focused on is there's no silver bullets, it's just 100 golden BBs. It's a phrase that I've heard a lot online. Yep. I'm just looking at it as we're looking at our customer journey. And it's okay. We're developing a QBR process. We're developing an onboarding video series. We're developing like all these little things. And I'm like, I don't think any one of these will help our client lifetime value challenge. But it's all of them. And if each one of these added a month and we did eight things, we added 8 months. So like, and you're then again, correct. They stack. Mm-hmm. So that's exponential in its nature. So I just love that. And just the, I appreciate you walking through it in detail. As you've looked back, what were the things that you, for lack of a word, like that if you had to start over, you're like, without question, this is what made these programs successful.
Without question. Again, I'd work smarter rather than harder. When we had to take a look at like 100 customers and put all their 50 task touch points, all their support ticks, everything into spreadsheets, and then having to go through and suss out and put human tags on them, I think could be to some degree give you error there. I'd throw all that into ChatGPT AI. I'd get a summation of it. And that's what helped me better understand what direction we needed to go, so that we could go with relative confidence. Everything that I've explained is a huge level of work, lots of detail. It's not something that just happens overnight. And so if you don't put the time in to understand at least a little bit of what your customers are telling you, you have all this information, then it just is a disservice to the long term being able to show that your program is effective and contributing to the bottom line.
Also curious on the flip side, which is I'm sure there were some bumps along the way. What is something that if you were to go back and start over that you would avoid doing the next time around?
I think it wasn't necessarily bumps. I think for anything, it was, hey, maybe we're sending too many emails at one time. We got feedback from our customers that like, hey, I'm getting emailed too much. Okay, we're going to pare that back a little bit. We, at some point in time, from a leadership perspective, had people that didn't believe that this is the program that we should keep for our customers, even though they had nothing to replace it. So I think I would be more vocal about the actual results that we were seeing instead of just thinking and taking for granted all the hard work that was put into it. In addition to that, I probably would make sure there's more opportunities than ever for customers to be able to seek with confidence what they're trying to understand about the business and what they've purchased to drive success for their business. Overall, I think it was a really good way to run initial journeys.
I love it. Thank you so much for joining me today. Before we round out the interview, if somebody's trying to get started with this, is there any other parting wisdom that you would give them as something that they should think through to make sure that these kind of post-sale journeys correct?
Yeah, I think you have to go and do whatever you can to bring as much data together. I've had to bring data together from 8 different systems. I've had it in one system. I've had it in 6 different systems. But putting all of that together in something that you can understand is, I think, data doesn't lie. Everybody can be as subjective as they want, but the data is telling you what the data is telling you, and you need to follow it. And you need to make sure that you have a lot of feedback loops from your customers so that you can continue to tweak and iterate. I think that's another big thing when you're taking a look at journeys in general, is it doesn't have to be perfect from the beginning. The whole thing is to learn. It's all a learning. It's all, hey, did this particular thing that we put in front of them get them to create the behavior we wanted them to create? And if not, okay, go try again. In addition to that, I would also say it's okay if you send out emails and they're not perfect. I think I get 2 or 3 a day and I have a good laugh because somebody has accidentally forgotten to check something or there was an oops. It's okay. Just continue to move forward and do the very best that you can.
I love it. Katie, again, thank you so much for joining me on this episode. If people want to find out more about you, where would you point them?
I would point them to LinkedIn. You can see me, Katie Agonik. That's my profile. In addition to that, you can check out sfeadvisors.com if you are interested in having somebody consult with from a post-sales customer journey perspective.
Thanks so much for joining us. This has been Scrappy ABM, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.